have any idea it would become this complicated? When you suggested that innocent little idea that we would do the best of Issues Etc. guests for the week that we're going on vacation, starting June 12th, this coming week, Jeff just makes this innocent suggestion. Let's do the best of Issues Etc. guests. Let's the listeners choose the guests for each day, 3 hours devoted to one of the top five favorite Issues Etc. guests from our listeners. Have a little poll and just have people email us with their votes. He never imagined how he's just been running back and forth all day long between his office and the printer for his computer, which happens for some odd reason to be in my office. Tabulating results, counting. Craig from Pricewaterhouse has been double-checking the results. And as of the first 24 hours of voting for your top five People's Choice Issues, etc., top five guests to play next week on the program, we've got a couple front runners and then a three-way tie. So, Dr. Paul Meyer comes in number one so far in the voting. The voting does close at 5:30 on Thursday this week. Is that right?
5:30 Eastern.
Thursday this week. Dr. Paul Meyer has the most votes. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, a very close second. Mike Horton is in third place. And then there's a three-way tie between Dr. Larry Rast, Dr. Gene Edward Veith, and Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. Also, Jeff Gibbs and Arthur Jest in that. No, that's a. They're a little farther down on the line. Jeff Gibbs is up next.
There's three there. That would be 4, 5, 6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Ah, there we go. So. Let's start all over again. Craig, start the show all over again. No. It's Paul Meyer in the lead so far. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery's in second place. Mike Horton's in third. There's a three-way tie for fourth. That would be Larry Rast, Gene Edward Veith, and Rod Rosenblatt. Somebody's going to have to break that tie, so you're going to have to keep voting. Jeff Gibbs, Arthur Jest, and that's a two-way tie at the end between Dr. Lewis Brighton and John Seleska. Now, do you want them to only vote for one, or do you want them to only vote once?
Only vote once, like we talked about. You only get one vote. You said, so vote more often, and we don't want the same people voting.
You are confusing me. We need Zogby in here. Vote once, but vote for five.
Once means one time. Do you need a dictionary? There's one right behind you.
I know. All right. So, vote only once. You should be able to regulate that because you're the one reading the emails. You can just throw, if someone wants to vote in, vote 10 times, you can throw 9 of the emails away if you want to. So vote once, but vote for your top five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Issues, Etc. guests. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click listen online. When you get there, you'll see the link to a way to vote and the list of guests that are up for the top five Issues, Etc. guests for next week, starting at June the 12th. One day each day is devoted to one of your top five Issues, Etc. guests. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live this Tuesday. It's June the 6th. That is 6-6-06. And on this date, it would be a good idea a little bit later in the program, last hour, to talk with Kim Riddle-Barger about what? Well, maybe a little bit about the Antichrist. Also about our interview yesterday with Tim LaHaye, who's managed to squeeze 15 books out of The Rise of the Antichrist in the Left Behind series. That'll be in the third hour of the program. We're going to start out today talking with Dr. Uwe Simonetto about the vocation of a soldier. Spend some of our time talking about Haditha. Some people are comparing this event to the atrocities that were sometimes committed in Vietnam. We'll be talking with him about that. Then, starting at 3:30, running till 5, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. First of all, the gay marriage amendment, some audio we didn't get to yesterday, still very timely from the president, from a supporter of the marriage amendment, and from an opponent of the marriage amendment. He tries to make a biblical case for gay marriage. And then some very interesting audio from a convert from Lutheranism to Eastern Orthodoxy. We've talked a lot about Eastern Orthodoxy here on Issues, Etc. Talked about it from various different angles. Gene Smith has been our guest. We've had an Eastern Orthodox priest on to talk about the particular teachings and practices of Orthodoxy. We're going to hear from a convert from Lutheranism to Eastern Orthodoxy. I was on a recent broadcast on the East Side, and we'll be playing some of that audio, getting your reaction. It's audio open lines in that 90 minutes of Issues, Etc. Then Dr. Kim Riddle-Barger will be our guest, and he'll join us to respond to our interview yesterday with Tim LaHaye, author of the Left Behind series. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Uwe Simonetta was a regular guest. Normally, he would be here with us in Studio A, but he is joining us from France. He's an international journalist and director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. Uwe, welcome back.
Good to be back.
We've heard so much about Haditha, this event that's under investigation with the Marines there. Would you compare it to an event, the events sometimes in Vietnam, like the My Lai massacre?
If the news reports are correct, the ones that I've been getting here, yes, I would compare it.
How so?
Well, you have a unit here that obviously has gone totally out of hand, if this is the case. Similar circumstances, unit had been attacked by incurred losses, and then ultimately killed people in the area where they had incurred these losses, and committed a massacre. In other words, soldiers went out of control. There evidently must have been some attempt to hide this, or by the officers. So it's a very similar situation in that sense. And what troubles me is that I covered the My Lai, I think, back in the Vietnam War. I covered the Vietnam War for 5 years as a correspondent for German newspapers. What troubles me is how the American public will react to this. In the Vietnam era, Vietnam veterans suffered horrendously from this image of being baby killers, an image that very unfair image, obviously, that they were given by the American and by international media. And we are now again in a similar sort of situation. We shouldn't be there, and should not be doing this. We should not be fighting this war. It's the wrong war. And so therefore, this would be another pretext to leave that war and get out of it, which of course would have tremendous repercussions, not only for the soldiers involved in Iraq, but also for the future of the United States.
Let's talk about it in the context of the vocation of a soldier. What is to be expected if soldiers are, in the course of doing their duties, asked to act outside their vocation?
Well,
is that part of the explanation?
Look at the Christian, both Roman Catholic and Lutheran, concept of the vocation of a soldier. A soldier is, in a sense, comparable to a surgeon. He has to do something that looks from the outside like a terrible operation, killing, amputating, all these sort of things. It's, if you take Luther's image, if you stood next to a surgeon, watching that surgeon amputate, say, your mother's arm, you would, as a child, not understand that the surgeon had to do this in order to protect your mother's body, and not just the arm, because the arm, which was rotten, would have ultimately destroyed the body. Luther used this analogy, and so did St. Thomas Aquinas, to describe the operation of a soldier. A soldier, therefore, is like everybody else, every other professional doing a work of love, namely loving your neighbor by protecting your neighbor and any interest. That is the good soldier. Now, of course, like everybody else, including surgeons, let's just think of abortion doctors, a soldier can get out of hand and can turn his calling into the exact opposite. So he's no longer working at all according to divine vocation, but is actually doing the opposite, namely committing evil.
So it's possible for anyone acting within their vocation, be it the surgeon or the police officer or the soldier, to abuse the tools and the task that they're given to do. When we look at a soldier pressed to his limits, you ask whether or not at some point it becomes natural that a soldier or a unit would crack under the pressure, given the proper circumstances. What do you mean?
Yes, well, precisely. I mean, in this particular case, it's natural, although it's not excusable, but it is understandable that a soldier, especially when ill-trained and not well-lit, might crack. I mean, if you put yourself, if you've ever been in combat, you put yourself in a position, as doubtless these soldiers in Haditha were, you've been going through the same territory over and over again, guided probably by a foolish strategy, which I believe is something that happened in Vietnam, and I suspect is happening here again. And you know, you watch your buddy, your closest. You're trained to be a killer to start with. That's your job. And you're trained to look out after the guy next to you, which is also your job as a soldier. And you watch your body being blown to pieces by some people whose culture you don't understand and whose culture is very difficult to understand. And it happens time and again and again. And then suddenly you flip and you open up and you see enemies. Now, obviously, I wasn't in Haditha, but I was in Vietnam, where the Viet Cong, the communists, used women and children to murder American soldiers. They used children to throw bombs at American soldiers. So therefore, anybody would be considered, or the soldier would consider anybody of this particular tribe a potential enemy, because the soldier would have seen, say, a Vietnamese, or in this particular case, an Arab kid, throw a bomb or opening up or being a co-conspirator in an egregious attack against his buddies, and then you crack. It's understandable. It is not permissible. It's obviously not excusable, and it has to be prosecuted. But it is understandable, and the people responsible for that are not just the soldiers who crack, but also leadership and obviously the people who conduct that kind of warfare, which is not within the rules of warfare as we understand it.
So part of the problem here may be the circumstance in which the soldier, even properly trained to deal with the enemy in that surgical way that you had described,
yeah,
can no longer, for one reason or another, distinguish between the enemy and someone who might just happen to be, you know, coming out of their house. He loses the ability to distinguish between those two for some reason.
He loses the ability to distinguish because he is really beside himself. And in German, we have a wonderful saying, it's verrückt, you know, it's move beside himself. That is precisely that. The only way to control this, to prevent this, is by a very, very firm leadership, an excellent leadership. Now, there's another thing that occurred to me comparing this with Vietnam. Evidently, here you had Marines involved, and we lie, these weren't Marines. These were army people, but let's take a Marine. A Marine has been a Marine is by definition somebody who actually goes on the offensive. He charges. His job is to take the beaches and secure territory, and then hand this territory over to the army to occupy. That is a Marine. A Marine is not somebody who should be used as a station, is not trained really to be a stationary occupant of territory. Same stupid bloody mistake was made in Vietnam that Marines were used for that type of a task. And, you know, it runs counter their training. You also have to understand the circumstances. If you are in combat, you are not always acting rationally. You act according to your training, the way you were drilled. Not the way you can't always stand and reflect. You're drilled a certain way, and of course, if you now suddenly have to do something that is counter to your training or opposite to your training, you might flip. These are circumstances here. I mean, to me, this is I find this particularly worrisome because I've seen so many analogies. I've seen American forces flip in Vietnam because they were expected to do something that they were not being trained for, number one. And number two, they saw people acting against them in a way they were not prepared for. So they began to hate. When hatred takes over, then, of course, you are in a serious, serious mess. And I think this is what is happening in Iraq right now.
We're talking with Dr. Uwe C. Minetto, international journalist and director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism, about the vocation of a soldier. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. Talk about the will to win, because warfare involves not only the soldiers on the field acting according to their vocation, but in reality it also involves citizens like us back home, Uwe, and the general populace, and in this case, in America's case, the voters' will to win a victory in Iraq.
Right. Yeah, and that is probably the most dire problem we have here. The question that's coming up now and has been posited several overseas as well as in the United States, is it ever possible, will it ever be possible for a democracy to win a war like this one? Now, I'm not actually even making a judgment whether this is a just war or not. Let's just assume this is a just war. Is a democracy capable of winning this? Because a democracy depends so much on the will of the sovereign in a democracy, and the sovereign in a democracy is the voter. I've been saying that again. Again, this is a calling, the electorate being called to be sovereign in a nation. Now, here you have a war against international terrorism. You have a war against evil. The voter is being exposed to snippets from the war. They don't get the whole picture. Your media in the United States and in most of the world are too lousy nowadays to actually give a whole picture, a healthy picture of this entire war. So now here you have it. The people are, as you have, if you're watching the polls, the people are beginning to tire of this war. After a very, very short period of time, I mean, you know, if you compare this with long wars in the past, like the Hundred Years' War between England and France, or the 30 Years' War in Germany, this is a very, very brief war, and already people are beginning to tire. So the problem we have here is that evil is actually allowed to take over, and clearly we're dealing with appalling evil. The evil of terrorists who actually fight a civilian population. It's a totally innocent people. The terrorists are actually doing, as part of their policy of what in Haditha some soldiers might have done or may not have done, which we're not sure yet of, running out of line, in other words. But that is not part of policy. And my worry is that if the United States once again abandons this project, this war, and gets out of it, getting bored of it, understandably, because you have 2,400 dead and 18,000 wounded, and if you've ever seen a war wound, my father lost his eyesight in a war, so I have a living image of, for the rest of my life, of what it's like to come out of a war. But that might mean that the United States will give this up, and then, of course, in the final analysis, the United, if America chickens out of this war, as she chickened out of Vietnam, then, of course, she will lose her status as a power. Nobody will take America seriously anymore. And, of course, terrorism, evil will have won out. And that is a very real danger, which is what I'm reflecting about when I'm reading and hearing about Haditha and other sort of events like that.
Uwe, would you be willing to stay with us for just a few minutes on
sure.
the other side of the break? I want to wrap up some loose strings with Uwe as we talk about the vocation of a soldier. Dr. Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist, director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center on Faith and Journalism. You can check out the website for the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Just go to ours, issuesetc.org, click links, and scroll down. You'll find a direct link to Uwe Simonetto and the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Now, when we come back from this break, the big question, Uwe's led us right to it, really is whether or not the American voter has unreasonable or perhaps completely unrealistic expectations about what soldiers ought to be able to do when they engage in their vocation, that is, warfare. 100 days, that's how long the first Gulf War took. You know, so now we're not talking about this as a second Gulf War anymore. It's a war in Iraq. 100 days, very few U.S. casualties during that war. It was over with very cleanly. Some people say we never finished it, but it was over and done with almost as quickly as the sitcom season, just the way we Americans like it. Well, 10 years later, we're faced with a war that has gone on for years, many would say dragged on for years, and it wasn't as clean as previous military operations that we engaged in that intervening decade. Kosovo, a pure air war, no U.S. casualties. Do we expect our soldiers to fight for us without dying? Because part of their vocation, of course, is not only to fight, but also to die. We'll be talking about that on the other side of the break. Dr. Uwe Simonetto is our guest. Then we're going to start about 90 minutes or so of audio open lines. We'll start out by hearing some audio on the gay marriage amendment from the president, from a supporter of the gay marriage amendment, and from an opponent of the amendment saying, no, the Bible has nothing to say whatsoever prohibiting gay marriage. And then some comments from a convert to Eastern Orthodoxy from Lutheranism. We've talked with Dr. Gene Smith, many times here on Issues, Etc., who's a convert from Orthodoxy to Lutheranism. Let's hear what the journey the other direction sounds like. We'll do that during audio open lines. And then Kim Riddlebarger will join us to react to our interview yesterday with Tim LaHaye.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Every day, every Christian is faced with a myriad of ethical decisions, both small and large. Political ethics, economic ethics, sexual ethics, cultural ethics. Many of these situations are clearly addressed in God's Word of Holy Scripture. Many of them are not. So what is a Christian to do? The title of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for June is Reasonable Ethics, A Christian Approach to Social, Economic, and Political Concerns by Robert Benet. You can order Reasonable Ethics by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and you can find out more about the book by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June, Reasonable Ethics, right there at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
A majority of Americans agree with pro-life stances on abortion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List. named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Abortion is often portrayed as a black and white issue. People are either for it or against it, with little regard to the complexities of the debate. But when people are given specific definitions of pro-life and pro-choice, the majority of Americans line up in the pro-life camp. That's the finding of a recent poll by the Susan B. Anthony List and the Real Women's Voices Coalition. Perhaps most encouraging, one of the groups most likely to identify with a pro-life message are women aged 18 to 34. The more Americans know, the more they call themselves pro-life.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. June 6, 1944, D-Day, the Allied invasion of Europe, 3,393 soldiers die at Normandy. How many Americans who go about their business today and become aware it's June 6th will think of D-Day? Certainly Normandy survivors, as will the families of those who made the ultimate sacrifice. I'm an early baby boomer, and my generation learned to mark this date in our memories. "We shall never forget" is a sentiment often heard about momentous dates in history, dates like Pearl Harbor on December the 7th, 9/11, and D-Day. But how does it become a lively date, a motivating fact from history, in the mind of a young person for whom 1944 seems as far away as 1776? Take a little survey of younger people around your office, and I venture not many will know the significance of June the 6th. I think a consciousness that God has expectations of us is a big part of the answer. God's Son Jesus won heaven for us, but God has not taken us there yet because he has work for us to do here and now. And that includes working for justice in both neighborhood and world and showing compassion to those in need. All of which is to say, to keep America's great dates alive, let's be mindful why God let us live this new day.
On a special edition of Focus on the Family, the President of the United States, Dr. James Dobson tells us why the Federal Marriage Protection Amendment is so critical to families and society. You'll hear from one of the most enthusiastic supporters of the bill, President George W. Bush, coming up on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Uwe Simonetto, and we're talking about the vocation of a soldier. Before we go on to the next question here, Uwe, I understand that you are acquainted and friends with the author of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for June, Reasonable Ethics, Robert Benet. Tell me, what do you expect from this friend of yours and colleague of yours by way of a treatise on Christian ethics in the public sphere?
Well, I think Robert Benet is just about one of the best interpreters of Lutheran theology for the left-hand kingdom, and I'm eager to read his newest work. I haven't so far, but Benet has by far the deepest insight and there's some cleanest insight into theology for the secular world. So I'm expecting a lot there.
Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for June is called Reasonable Ethics, A Christian Approach to Social, Economic, and Political Concerns by Robert Benet. We're doing a series with him in the course of these weeks of June, and so you might want to tune in for those conversations we have with the author of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for June. For more information on the book, go to our website, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org, or you can call and order the book from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Uwe, of course, today is when we remember what we call D-Day, the storming of the beaches at Normandy,
right.
And about 3,400 U.S. soldiers died in a single day in that very broad assault, decisive in ending the war in Europe.
Right.
You mentioned before the break that about 2,400 have died so far in over 2 years in Iraq. Do we unreasonably and unrealistically expect our soldiers to fight but not to die?
Well, yeah, that seems to be the newest thing that has come up since the 1960s, that somehow you can be a soldier without dying, and or actually can be a soldier without really killing either. I mean, this is a funny approach to this. It's totally goofy. I mean, this is that's the approach of a population that whose minds have been warped by television and that. Of course, you die in a zone, and you have to be aware of this. This, by the way, is another aspect which I meant to mention before the break here. In the past, of course, you wouldn't have women in combat. Now you have women in combat, which I think is an aberration. But what people don't seem to realize is who send women to combat. First of all, is that women get maimed and die, and quite a lot of women died or got maimed in Iraq right now. Secondly, that whilst a soldier might already flip his lid seeing his best buddy, male in that case, die, he goes even more berserk if a woman gets ripped to pieces, because, I mean, most of us are conditioned, hopefully at least we are conditioned to want to protect the female gender and women among us. And suddenly that happens, which aggravates the whole situation. I wouldn't be surprised if the sight of women being killed in Iraq might not have triggered some of these horrible things that we're hearing about now. We are not living in a real world, it seems to me. We watch everything on television. We had people journalists embedded with units, and I think they're doing very often a superb job. I'm not denying that at all. But we are not living a real world because we don't realize that when somebody exposes himself to gunfire or to terrorism or explosives, that he gets maimed or killed, or she gets maimed or killed. And that is what has to be hammered home to the population. And not that they then suddenly get into a sort of schmaltz saying, oh, my God, now I didn't want little Jack to get hurt out there. Well, little Jack does get hurt out there. That is the job of a soldier.
The majority of the 18,000 wounded in Iraq so far have been wounded during what is normally referred to as the occupation phase rather than the assault phase the operations over there. Are we asking our soldiers to linger in harm's way without really giving them the ability, either through the mission or whatever, the means of dealing with the enemy there?
Well, here's the point. If you there have always been several phases in warfare, not just in this particular war. Even in the classical wars, you have had phases where soldiers had to linger on and therefore expose themselves to dangers from terrorism or from insurgents, etc. You have to do this. I mean, obviously, this war has been very ill-conceived and badly planned, and I fully agree with those who have been chiding Rumsfeld for that. Going about this, not preparing for the worst, and I think a grave injustice has been done to the military in that respect. But I mean, we should not expect the military to have a nice holiday by the beach after the initial assault has been completed. It's not a holiday by the beach. It's not a camp. It's not a lovely trip. It is, you are in a desperately dangerous situation. So there is another thing I want to add to this here, and that is the cultural problem. I already found in Vietnam that the military there were not very well prepared to deal with other cultures, and yet the Vietnamese obviously seemed infinitely more lovable than the people that you have to deal with in Iraq right now, because you know, people who actually use religion as an excuse for murdering other people, including civilians, including their own kind, are not what you normally expect from rational or good human beings. And it is asking too much of soldiers who are not psychiatrists, not psychologists, not social scientists, but they're soldiers, to grapple with this phenomenon, which none of us, even those of us who have studied all this, can understand. I don't understand these people. I don't understand. I cannot, in my own intellect, fails at the sight of what is happening over there. Now, if you're in combat and if you're there exposed to it on a daily basis and see the horror day after day after day, then obviously something can be go terribly wrong. Again, no excuse for this, but it is an explanation for what might have happened.
Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Jerry. She's waiting in South County. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Todd. And hi, Ube.
Hi.
The way I see it, the Iraqis are at war with each other now. The Sunnis are kidnapping the Shiites, Kurds, and killing them on the spot. And there's a power play going on between the Sunnis and Shiites, but in the offing, Sharia or Islamic law is still the most favored by them, not secular law. So as long as our coalition and American troops are in Iraq, these two groups are not going to settle their differences. I think we should pull away from the battlefield, maybe stay nearby in Kuwait or Guam in case we are needed. But these opposing Islamic groups, they must face off with no interference from outside sources.
All right, Jerry, thank you very much for the call. Let's see what Uwe has to say about that. Uwe, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I understand Jerry's sentiments, although it's not quite that simple. First of all, we do have even if we if it were as simple as that you're dealing here with Sunni versus some Shiite and Kurds and others, you still have a responsibility for the civilian population. You still have a responsibility for the people who have been, don't forget, braving terrorism to go to the polls and elect a government. If you commence something in international affairs, you have to finish it. You can't just pull out and say, well, let you idiots kill each other, and what's left over we'll collect and then give you a nice warm bed to sleep in. That's not the way you conduct international politics. And then, let us not forget the final thing, and that is there is, of course, a very American interest here. You are dealing with a part of the world which supplies you with your lifeblood, namely oil. If you now pull out and hand over Iraq, you can't sit back. There is no real position where you can suddenly sit and scratch your head and have a Coke. If you hand this over to the other to the terrorists, then of course you lose not just Iraq, which is a main supplier of oil, but you will ultimately lose the whole region. And then of course I urge Americans to please stop being dependent on oil. But how do you do that? I mean, it is not possible. Obviously, America is also defending its own interests. Selfish though they might be, but it is an interest that all Americans have, and so therefore you can't just give this thing up. And if you want to give it up, then you have to be prepared to be very heavy-duty victims here. And I don't think I love your country, and I've been living there for on and off for 40 years, but I don't see anybody in the United States willing to give up creature comforts overnight for that.
Finally then, Uwe, the very famous and I think well-intentioned motto of the United Nations, of course, is make war no more. They have that famous statue outside of the sword being beaten into a plowshare, and the reference, of course, to the prophet Isaiah. But in light of that, the kind of idealistic view that someday we can do away with the vocation of the soldier, please speak finally about the necessity, as long as we continue to live in this fallen world, of people living out the vocation of soldier.
Well, the necessity is here because this is a world where you do have evil. This is a world where you do have to protect yourself. It is not a fully redeemed world, and you need cops. You know, you need surgeons. There is cancer about. If this were a perfect world, you wouldn't have cancer, and so therefore you wouldn't need a cancer surgeon. You wouldn't have criminals. You wouldn't have any. You wouldn't need any cops. So therefore, we have to do that. And it's very funny thing. The people who actually gave this monument swords and plowshares were the Soviet Union, you know, who strove to dominate the whole world with a very, very evil ideology. I don't know whether you're aware of this, but I mean, this monument opposite the United Nations, given to the United Nations, well, the donors for the Soviet Union here. So let's not fall for cheap rhetoric, but just do what we have to do, but at the same time pursue strategies and policies that allow soldiers to do their handiwork well and properly and according to their calling. And then, of course, if they go wrong, call them to task, and if they're badly commanded, then please call the officers who command them badly to task, and including generals, and not just lieutenants like Lieutenant William Kelly back in the My Lai days in 1968 in Vietnam.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist, director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center on Faith and Journalism. Uwe, thanks for taking your time to be with us here on Issues, Etc.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to start a little bit of audio open lines. Before we get started on the audio open lines, a few vote totals on our Issues, Etc. favorite guests that you're voting for to be featured all 5 days during the week of June the 12th. Leading the pack among the favorite guests of Issues, Etc., and I'm giving you here the top 10, even though we'll only have the top 5 broadcast during that week. Paul Myers leading the pack, closely followed by Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn is number 3. For the 4 position, there is a 4-way tie. Larry Rast, Gene Edward Veith, Rod Rosenblatt, and Norman Nagel. Then Dr. Jeff Gibbs carries the next in the top 10, Dr. Arthur Jest. And then for the final spot in that top 10, there's a 2-way tie between Lewis Brighton and Dr. John Seleska. Those are the top 10 so far in your voting. If you want to vote for the top 5 Issues, Etc. guests to be broadcast each day during that week of June the 12th through the 15th, go to our website, issuesetc.org, click Listen Online. There you will find a list of guests from which you can choose. Vote for 5, but vote only once. Vote for 5 of the guests, but vote only once via the email issuesetc@kfuo.org. And if you can't remember that address, there's a little link that looks like an envelope that you can use right there. If you go to issuesetc.org, click Listen Online, and you'll find the list of the guests and a way to email us with your top 5. Please vote only once. It's Audio Open Lines. We're going to be hearing first about the gay marriage amendment. Of course, the debate continues on this, and there are reasonable arguments to be made on both sides. Yesterday, we spoke with a guest who said, look, not exactly against this protection of marriage amendment, but it doesn't do everything that needs to be done. The president has come out recently supporting the marriage amendment that would define marriage in the United States by constitutional amendment as one man and one woman, but would leave open the issue of whether or not there can be same-sex unions. While the U.S. Senate is debating the issue of gay marriage, let's hear from both sides on this issue. Here's Dr. Robert George of the Religious Coalition for Marriage. He says that Americans may be forced to accept gay marriage regardless of their faith.
Marriage is between a man and a woman and only one of each. if that is legally now defined as a prejudicial view, a form of discrimination, a form of bigotry, then it will be attacked by the law in the same way that racial bigotry is attacked in the law now.
Now, the point he's trying to make here is, if we don't have something, and he's arguing for the Protection of Marriage Amendment, if we don't have something, then the default position is that defining marriage as a man and a woman, one man, one woman only, will by default be considered a discriminatory way of thinking and acting and legislating. That's a good point to consider. Now, that still leaves open the question of what do you do? Is this marriage amendment the amendment we need, or something stronger or weaker? Robert George goes on to say that Americans who believe that gay marriage is immoral might find their children being taught otherwise.
If we go down the route of same-sex marriage, that will be what is taught to children in schools against their parents' wishes, even if their parents are strong believers in the traditional conjugal conception, whether they are Protestants, Catholics, observant Jews.
Now, I don't know how far away that reality is, but think about it for a moment. In Massachusetts, where gay marriage is legal, fully recognized, even though it's not recognized in any other states, in spite of the full faith and credit clause of the U.S. Constitution, I'm surprised no one's talking about that again, but they will sooner or later. In Massachusetts, where kids go to school, what do you do in a school where the teacher says, look, I have no dog in this race, but if the state says that same-sex couples can marry, as well as heterosexual couples, then when we talk about marriage or family life, I feel at liberty to portray marriage and family life as either of those options, or both. So if it's Heather has two mommies, or if it's another way of portraying the family, let's say in classroom illustrations where there might be two dads or two moms in Massachusetts, what else will you expect? It's a good point to consider when thinking about the issue of gay marriage, what you want your kids to be taught, and whether that presents a pressing need for us to do something now about gay marriage while it's still only 1.5 states that are seriously considering it. Now, on the left, here's Harry Knox of the Human Rights Council, a very well-known pro-homosexual group. And now he tries to make a biblical case for homosexuality and homosexual marriage. And he begins by saying that homosexuality is, in fact, a God-given trait.
Lesbian and gay people who have really, truly sought to change through prayer and psychotherapy are not able to do so because sexual orientation is an immutable characteristic that must be a gift from God and our genes.
There's a couple leaps in logic there. I wonder if you detect them. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 6th of June, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. He says, and I'll just present what he said there, and you tell me where the leaps are. People have tried earnestly to change their sexual orientation and have failed. Why, he says? It is an immutable characteristic from their birth. That is fancy language for something they can't change. He then says, well, God made them this way. It's a gift of God, in fact. They've tried to change and they can't. It's time that we recognize, says Harry Knox of the Human Rights Council, that these people with sexual orientations toward the same sex shouldn't try to change, but accept this as a gift of God, their sexual orientation. There's his argument. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Harry Knox says that Sodom and Gomorrah, an account that's often cited by those who are trying to make a biblical case against homosexuality, were not destroyed because of homosexuality, but for some, well, it's quite a different reason.
The Sodom and Gomorrah story really has nothing to do with gay sexual orientation and has everything to do with whether or not the stranger is welcomed into the midst of a community.
Now, he's made two cases so far in favor of gay marriage. One is kind of a general philosophical case. If gays try to change and they can't, maybe they should accept it as a gift of God. that what they really are dealing with is an unchangeable characteristic in themselves, that God made them this way, except it is a gift from God. That's the philosophical case. Now he treads into biblical territory where he says we've been misreading Sodom and Gomorrah, the famous account there. That is, you will note, however, that God doesn't list only homosexuality as the reason for destroying Sodom and Gomorrah. He simply says to Abraham before he sends Lot down there, Sodom's iniquity has come to my attention. So let's be careful that we don't overstate the case. It is not only because of Sodom and Gomorrah's tendencies toward homosexuality and acceptance of it, but their general iniquity, of which homosexuality was merely a symptom. No, Knox says we've been misreading that. It's really because they weren't hospitable. They were hospitable enough to Lot and his wife and his two daughters. They weren't hospitable, however, to these two strangers, these two angels who came, and that's the reason God really destroyed them. Which kind of makes you wonder why God had planned to destroy them before he ever sent the two strangers to him. Now, there's more on this. I want to come back to it in just a moment. But he's made the philosophical and now the biblical case. He's got another biblical case to make here. Harry Knox of the Human Rights Campaign says that in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul does not condemn committed homosexual relationships as we have them today.
He's talking about idolatrous acts before pagan fertility idols. And he's also talking about leaving relationship-oriented sexual expression to simply do whatever feels good and whatever goes.
All right. These all sound very familiar to me, by the way. I had written something for Concordia Publishing House a couple of years ago on homosexual marriage, in fact. I think it's called Homosexual Marriage Facing the Question. I can't remember the title of it exactly. A little pamphlet there. And all of these arguments made by Harry Knox of the Human Rights Foundation all ring very familiar. Now look, Sodom and Gomorrah wasn't about homosexuality, it was about inhospitality. And St. Paul was not condemning homosexuality per se, but promiscuity and idolatrous behavior that may have involved some homosexual behavior, but the real problem with it was that it was idolatrous and it was pagan behavior. Those are very familiar arguments. But I would point out to you that both of those arguments, essentially made from Scripture, rely upon dismissing what the text has to say in order to make their point, rather than listening to what the text has to say to make their point. We'll talk about this more on the other side of the break during audio open lines. I want to hear from you during this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What do you make of these arguments for homosexual marriage being made by Henry Knox? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.